Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/ScorecardPlus for details.
Hour number two of Caroline, Willie, and D-Maze live from Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park for Titans training camp day number one. Junior Riddle, Derek Mason in today. And we got Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow from Outkick. Jonathan, how are we doing today?
Doing great, guys. Hope everything is well out at training camp. And I'm glad football is back, even in a limited fashion as we get going for camp and practices across the league.
It is back, and it has been a great day out here at Ascension St. Thomas because it seems like the clouds decided to come out and give us some cover, so it's not been as blazing hot as it normally is in July in past years.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's another thing that D-Mace had to go through. It was always hot and miserable on two-a-days, now even the players have cloud cover. That's in the new CBA.
They're just jittering around there. They're doing everything they can, Hutton, to protect the health. But a big storyline of training camp this year obviously is going to be the battle for the backup quarterback position. We saw in minicamp Malik Willis really take a step forward from what we saw last year, Jonathan. But today, something that Derek and I both collectively noticed, that Will Levis seemed to have the better day of training camp on day one. So what is your reaction to that?
I mean, I expect Will Levis to be the backup quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. He's going to get a ton of reps in the preseason, as will Malik Willis. And I know that Vrabel gave Willis a shout-out for his offseason, you know, and for grinding and trying to improve and do all that. And by all accounts, his offseason's been good. When the media has been able to observe. It's a storyline of camp. The emergency quarterback option now is also playing into this. But, yeah, I don't know how Willis isn't the odd man out of this, with Levis being the second-round pick this year with the new GM, and with Vrabel a year after taking a backup QB, doing it again. I don't know why you draft Levis if he's not backing up Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, you're right about that. And it's going to be Hutt, it's going to be a fluid situation, I think, because I told June, I said, listen, you know, there are going to be days where Malik Willis looks better than Will Levis, and there's going to be days that Will Levis look better than Malik Willis. But what I want to see is that both guys are getting better each day. I think if that happens, then that helps not just those two individuals, but it helps the Titans.
Yeah, and while I'm just sitting here thinking about Willis in this offense, you know, Tim Kelly's also signed off on Levis. Let's put that out there too. Mm-hmm. But we did see in spurts, and I didn't like how Todd Downing forced some of the gadget plays and things with Willis last year when he wasn't needing – when Tannehill was healthy. But I wonder if they use him in some way to their benefit offensively like that again. I don't know, but if so, you know, that would be a reason to keep him active on game day in certain situations. Again, I think they can get creative and put the ball in his hands and see what happens with his legs and how he runs. He's got to improve in the passing game. That's been an absolute must from Vrabel. We saw that last year in the preseason. That can't happen again, but all accounts point to him doing exactly that. So, with that being said, let's just look at it from the Will Levis perspective. Mm-hmm. if he loses the backup job to Malik Willis, what is going on there? Like that, just surface level, without seeing any preseason, without knowing any injury things that are going to pop up, all of that plays a factor. But drafting Levis based on value, and he falls to the second round, and then he potentially, hypothetically here for our discussion, doesn't win the backup gig to a guy that could not finish the season as the starter because Joshua Dobbs on 4 days' notice was better for them in a must-win game against Jacksonville. Yeah, that's not a good sign if it ends up that way, guys. That's just me point blank saying that's a huge screw up on their end if Levis is not beating out Willis.
We'll talk with Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Now, what is another position? Because I want to see if you agree with me on this. Now, we know the offensive line is a storyline in this training camp. We know, well, the receivers and who's going to make up the back end of the depth with this receiver core. We know that will be a story. But I think the other story, and I think the story that is sort of being missed because of the front seven and how good they have been, is the secondary. I think if this team is going to take another step, they can't rely so heavy on the defensive front seven, because we saw what happened last year. Those guys started to get injured. Jeffrey was playing on a bum ankle. And if you don't have a secondary that can hold up, meaning those three corners, then it's going to be a long day.
Yeah, you can speak volumes to this. I mean, it's not even top corner against top receiver. Mm-hmm. It's the slot against their third best receiver against the Titans' third best defensive back, right? Like that one-on-one matchup is going to be on an island too, because you're probably giving some help over the top to the best receiving option that they're going to face throughout. That will start in week one with Chris Olave, for instance, and Michael Thomas and others. This team, the heart of this team is the defensive front. They've got, what, $55 million or so in that defensive line based on contract values. That's where the production has to happen. They bring in Arden Key. He's energized. He's available. I think that's important throughout his career. He's been available. Landry's coming off injury, though. You're right. They have put their stock into players on the defensive backfield that, it's boom or bust right now. Make or break years for a lot of them. And in, Farley's case, he still can't get on the field. So, yeah, I mean, but Mace, the one thing the Titans have done well, even in some really dire spots, defensively, they have lived up to the next man up mantra. Exactly. And I do think the coaches have gotten the most out of talent that, it would be on a practice squad for a team that's healthy. And instead, they're starting on any given Sunday based on the injury history of the last 2 years. Defensively, I'm very confident in them getting the most out of certain players and keeping it steady. But that doesn't always win you games in a passing league where the rules are set up against the defense, especially on the outside in the passing game.
So, Jonathan, we had talked about this previously before, and I think obviously, clearly, everybody can see that this defense is going to be the strength of this team. But one position group on the defense that concerns me going into the season is the inside linebacker position. And today we saw a guy, Jack Gibbons, who was signed off the streets last year. He got some opportunities due to injury late last year, get some good reps. What do you see coming out of that position this year, and who do you really see kind of taking that step and holding the reins for the inside linebacker position in the middle of the defense?
Well, Monty Rice, he's got to step up and be the version of David Long as far as the player that we saw on the field instead of in the training room. Rice has also been in the training room. But then they have Al Shire, who is a hand-picked player that they signed from San Francisco through Rand Carthon whenever he got the job. They're looking for guys that can steady the ship and seek the ball. guys that are going to be able to fill a gap and shed blocks and potentially have to cover in a red zone situation as well. But you're right to point this out, but they mix and match so much at that spot and rotate. They've been rotating a lot of guys in over the last couple of years. It feels more about, you know, that line of thinking right now. And, you know, they lost players at that spot, but Junie, they didn't lose a lot of game reps. I mean, it was guys that are hurt a lot. I like David Long Jr., the player, but, you know, Vrabel has an issue with the soft tissue problems that he's had. And he got a contract that the Titans could have easily re-signed him for whenever he signed with the Dolphins. Point being, the guy they signed from San Francisco, Al Shire, he's been available, and he is in line with what Carthon wants to bring in, and production versus price. And that's the version that they have right now at the inside linebacker spot. But they've invested high in that spot in recent years through the draft. I like the version of what they have, investing in other key areas, and the inside linebacker just isn't one of those right now, based on the way the offenses are set up that you have to defend.
The big news here recently is obviously the signing of DeAndre Hopkins. He spoke to the media yesterday, and he talked about his recruitment and how he got there and why he ended up going with the Tennessee Titans. What were your takeaways from that interview and in the tone that got? Because it's been getting a lot of different mixed reviews from people who watched it.
Well, I mean, I hear him, and I think he should come in and be energized. No doubt about it. An opportunity to get another paycheck soon to come. I mean, that would be the motivation. Mason and I talked about this. It was last week or the week before. At 31, like, is he on a mental pace to want to prove all the doubters wrong? There's not many guys. Mace is one of them. At that age, who then go on to have 4,000 more yards in their career post 31. It doesn't happen. It's in the 23 or 24 in the history of the league. He can certainly be that, but the suitors were not there. You know, the Patriots had a chance to match it. They didn't. The type of contract that the Titans offered and what was deemed aggressive, the Titans were the most aggressive, but they were one of two teams in the mix. And Kansas City didn't even try to, you know, throw an offer out there. That was peculiar, and that should have him pissed off for greatness. And he's been great. He's got a great range on a catch radius, and he scores touchdowns. He should come in and be that player. And if he is, the Titans have improved immensely on offense. They're going to score more than 18 points a game. Let's just start there. If Hopkins comes in and he's that player. But I get the mixed reviews because you don't really know. I think we would recognize him. He's a superstar in the league, but he's not really vocal. You don't hear from him like you do some of the other guys. So I think there is an unknown on the tenor and tone of what he's bringing. But here's the thing. I do get the sense it's more than just a Julio Jones from him. Like it's not a – I don't think it's just a lackadaisical, all right, let's finish up. Let's, you know, get another paycheck for a year and see what happens. I think it's different than that based on what he's trying to prove. And, you know, all the talk about trying to get traded when it didn't happen, he should be looking to prove a point.
That's Jonathan Hutton from Outkicks. Hot mic with Hutton and Withrow. Appreciate you taking the time, Hutt, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Always enjoy this, guys. Thank you.
Yep.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Coming up next, we're going to kind of dive into what Jonathan had to say. We're also going to get into a little bit of what Ryan Tannehill looked like and who he seemed to have some really good chemistry with today in 7-7 and 11-11. You're listening to Caroline Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball today at 5:35 on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Norfolk Tides, AAA affiliate of the Baltimore Orioles. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Jonathan Hutton from Outkick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow just joined us and gave us a lot of good insight on Titans training camp. But I wanted to get into a little bit of Ryan Tannehill. We talked about the backup quarterbacks and their competition and who looked good. But Ryan Tannehill also looks pretty sharp here today, not making a lot of mistakes, looking like the starter that he is supposed to be. And I'll tell you this. I was really surprised because through minicamp, everybody was raving about how great he looked with Treylon Burks and Chig Okonkwo. And last year we saw what he looked like with Kyle Phillips and how they had great chemistry. But today, if I had to pick one receiver that he was just feeding the ball to that looked like they were just completely in sync, is his new number one weapon, DeAndre Hopkins. Just finding him all different kinds of route combinations, sideline, middle of the field, down the field. I felt like he was all over the place with D-Hop today.
Well, you're gonna see that early on to try to get him acclimated to what's going on. And then the defense is going to dictate some of it as well. The type of defense they're playing, you know, who's the first read, who's the second read. So the defense will always dictate, unless there's a situation where, you know, you just got to get the ball to your guy. But the defense a lot of times dictates where the ball is going to go. In this situation, you know, D-Hop got a lot of opportunities, you know, to catch the football. And, you know, that's something that I'm not worried about D-Hop catching the football. He's going to catch the football. It's just getting him acclimated to this offense. How much more does he still have left in the tank? You know, can he finish out the whole season? Can he adjust to possibly being a number two and not having the high volume of catches or opportunities? Those are the things that I'm sort of holding out to make my judgment, you know, on D-Hop, because I know a lot of that comes into factor. It's not just a guy going out there running the routes and being able to catch the football. There's a lot of things that goes with it, especially a guy that, you know, is a little bit longer in the tooth, football-wise.
Yeah.
You know, so, but you're going to see that early on. I went through the same thing when I left here and went to Baltimore. You know, I was getting targeted a lot because you want to get familiar with the quarterback, with the offense, with the system. Quarterback wants to get familiar with you. But then it sort of morphed out to everybody else because now I've sort of, you know, picked up on everything, helped out everybody. Now these younger guys start to, you know, fill in and start to make plays. And I expect that from Treylon Burks and Kyle Phillips and the rest of the guys.
Now I got a question for you. And I ain't trying to call you out, D-Mace. You know, I love you. But a little while ago when D-Hop and all these meetings were going on and stuff like that, you were kind of against bringing him in here, and you wanted to see some of these guys down the depth chart to get some opportunities. Do you still feel that way, or are you kind of hopping on this D-Hop wave?
I'm still waiting to see. Again, my problem has never been whether D-Hop can catch the football or not.
Yeah.
You know, I've been on record to say, listen, this guy is probably – he's the best catcher of the football since Larry Fitzgerald and Chris Carter. There are a lot of guys that can catch the football, but what he's able to do – and some of these younger guys, too, Chase and Jefferson and T. Higgins, guys like that, and Devontae Adams. But when you're talking about strictly just a catcher of the football, I don't think there's no better one than Hop. But I would have loved to see – these younger guys, you know, get an opportunity to step up into a role that is meant for them, whatever role that is.
Yeah.
Now, they're still going to get their opportunities, but it's not going to be as many because once we get to the first 2 weeks of camp, now we're starting to concentrate on our guys, the guys that we know are going to be on this team. So we're going to continue to work with them more and more and more. And, you know, these young guys got to show early on that they're keeping up with the train. Because if you ain't keeping up with the train, you're going to get left behind. So I think that way because I was in that situation. So I'm a little bit more sensitive than everybody else.
Yeah.
Because I've been that third, fourth, fifth receiver and working my way up and then bringing in veteran guys and not truly giving me an opportunity to go out there and play. Because sometimes, more times than not, it's opportunities that guys get or don't get that allows them to play in this league for, you know, periods of time or for, you know, whatever time, say 5-6 years. It's the opportunities that you get at whatever position. And if you make do on that opportunity, then you're going to last in this league.
So I kind of see it this way. You know, the guys that are down on the depth chart, for me, I don't really see, like, a young guy that this might have implications for. Nick Westbrook-Ikhinne. Like, he's had his opportunities the last couple of years in this offense. And, you know, he's had some productive games. And, you know, he's been a solid depth receiver piece. But, you know, he's had his opportunities. Chris Moore. He's been in the league since 2016. You know, he's had his opportunities. He had a better year last year. Don't get me wrong.
He got a real opportunity last year, and he made do on it.
Yeah. Well, again, one year is one year, and when you're talking about Houston wide receiving core compared to the Titans, I mean, you're not talking about a lot of discrepancies. I see it this way, that the Titans were going to come into this year, and they were going to be relying heavily on three guys, and that's obviously Treylon Burks, who they drafted. You know, with their first pick last year, Chigakonkwo, who really didn't get the volume that we were all calling for him to get, but yet at the end of the year he was still on top of the receiving yards stat line for the Titans, even with that lack of production, and then Kyle Phillips, who was injured most of last year. So they were going into this season relying on a lot of year two guys, and I felt like that could have been a cause for failure. Because you're putting all your eggs into young guys that are unproven. You add one significant veteran like this. You put Treylon as the number two for now, until he proves himself. And then you put Chig, you know, he's still going to be roam in the middle of the field. He's still going to be the number one tight end. But now he's more of the third option rather than the number two option. And now Kyle Phillips, who last year had probably the best chemistry with Tannehill coming out of training camp. He's your fourth option, and now it seems like with all the attention going everywhere and in the run game with Derrick Henry, I feel like he's going to have looks for days in the middle of the field to let him do what he does best. And I think that it just helps everybody, and it gives more people of an opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it can work several different ways, you know, and, you know, he's a guy in D-Hop that, you know, the minute he steps in, he's going to be more than a contributor to this offense. He's going to make your offense better. Now, how much better? I don't know. None of us will know until they get going during the season. But just on paper, what he's done as a veteran guy, he's going to make your offense or your passing game a little bit better. But your passing game is not going to be where it needs to be unless those other guys pick up the slack. The old saying is, you're only as strong as your weakest link. Well, they need their weakest link to be a contributor, to be a guy that they can count on, you know, if one of these other guys go down. So to me, we know what we have, or at least I know what they have in D-Hop and in Treylon and Chig, and even in Kyle Phillips. I think they have four guys that are able to you know, is it the best in the league as far as pass catchers? No, but they're sort of in that middle. You know, they're sort of in that middle, and they have an opportunity to move up or down. But a lot of that is predicated on how that bottom half of that roster and that receiver room is. Because if I got to rely heavy all year on three guys, we're gonna have a problem. We're going to have a serious problem. We're going to be in the same situation that we were in, you know, when we just relied so heavy on Brown and Corey Davis, even though they were able to do some things in the offense. But once one of those guys go down, now you're looking around like, who's going to be our pass catcher? So that bottom half of the receiving room, they need to show that they can be more than just contributors on this team. They got to show that they can go out and get the job done if, you know, DeAndre can't practice or play, if Treylon can't play or practice. Those guys, Chris Moore, Kyle Phillips, Racy McMath, Dowd, the new guy that just drafted. Those guys got to show that if anything happens to one of these two top guys or three top guys, meaning Chig also, then we can pick up the slack. We don't need to carry the season. We just need to carry a game or two or three if they're not playing.
I want to continue this conversation on the other side, because when D-Hop spoke to the media yesterday, he highlighted something about the Tim Kelly offense that put him into a situation that could really kind of expand what this offense wants to do. We're going to get into that next, but Caroline Willie and D-Maze is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 years or older and in Tennessee to bet. Again, you are listening to Caroline Willie and D-Maze here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
From what I remember, I think when I was in the slot, you know, you can go back and fact check me, but I might have been, you know, like top five productive slot receiver at the time. And that was my first year being in the slot. So obviously Tim knew how to call plays, and, you know, it worked. We were very productive. You know, we were, you know, a couple games away from getting to where we wanted to get to. So I think that helps a lot, not just having me outside where teams can kind of, you know, double me or just, you know, take me out the game at one position, but move me around, not just – no, it doesn't help myself, but the offense as well.
That was DeAndre Hopkins yesterday speaking about being a part of Tim Kelly's offense, and in particular talking about how he lined up in the slot and was top five in productivity when he lined up there. So I thought we should bring this up because our very own Derek Mason has some experience with playing in the slot and playing in the outside and how that can change the dynamic of the offense. So, D-Mace, in your experience, with you being a very versatile receiver, being able to do both of those positions, playing inside and out, what does that bring to a receiving core, and how does that make it harder for a defense to defend?
I think one, obviously, it brings versatility, that you can take your number one guy, and he's just not a, you know, inside guy, or he's just not an outside guy. He's a guy that you can take and move him around and put him in multiple places. I can remember when I first got here in 97, you know, being the fourth round draft pick, you know, Les Steckel, who was then the offensive coordinator, he said, listen, I want you to learn the X and the H and some of the Z. And I'm thinking as a rookie, I'm thinking like, man, why am I learning all these positions? Like, I'm going to do it. But I wasn't the first receiver you drafted. You know, give me an opportunity to you know, excel. Give me an opportunity to go out there and prove that I can play. And but what I didn't know is that's what he was doing. He understood and he thought highly of me that this kid can learn more than just one position. So we're going to put him in the inside. We're going to put him in the outside and, you know, see if he can handle it. And I could. And I absorbed it all. I had my bumps in the roads here and there, but it helped me in the long run. So when I did become a starter, I had a lot of familiarity with playing in the slot. You got to know a lot. You got to read the defense. You got to know what the linebackers are doing. You got to know what the safeties are doing. You got to know what that outside corner is doing, because a lot of teams like to, you know, disguise their coverage as well. Every team likes to disguise their coverage and give you something pre-snap, and then there's something post-snap. That if you're not paying attention, you're not seeing. So I had to know from an inside slot position what they were doing on that first and second level in regards to not just the slot guy that was covering me, but the linebackers that may shift out and bump out over me. The inside backer, what is he doing? The outside corner, what is he doing? Is he in man? Is he in trail technique? Is he in cover two man? What is he playing? So I had to learn all those things. But it allowed me the ability to go out there and work the middle of the field the way I knew how, building that rapport with the quarterback, knowing that wherever I'm put, I'm going to excel. And D-Hop, that's what he's been able to do in his career. He talked about the first year he played in the slot under Tim Kelly. He was highly productive, and he absolutely right. But, again, that was 6 years ago. You know, this version of D-Hop, how is he going to be able to operate in the slot as opposed to the D-Hop when he first did it? He was a lot quicker, a lot younger, a little bit faster. So that slot looked a little bit different to him. How is it going to look to him now, now that he's lost a little bit of that foot speed, now that maybe a little bit of that quickness has gone away, now defenses are playing a little bit different now. Now they're putting their best cornerback as a slot as opposed to putting him outside. How do you then operate? And then, you know, how does the Titans view him at that position, meaning a slot, because you still got Kyle Phillips, who is your slot guy. Like, he is the guy that you wanted in there. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting how they use DeAndre Hopkins. And when he says slot, it doesn't necessarily mean he's the third wide. Mm-hmm. They can get into slot various different ways. They can line up in it. They can motion to it. They can do multiple things where he ends up the slot guy. He can start off as a single receiver, but then they can motion Kyle Phillips or Traylon Burks over, and then he can become the slot. He can become the slot if they motion a tight end over. So there's various ways they can get to D-Hop while he's the slot guy. So that's going to be interesting to see how they use him in regards to that position.
615-737-1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Send in some texts and give us a call about your thoughts on the impact that DeAndre Hopkins can have on this receiving core. And I'll tell you this, and we were kind of talking about this briefly in the break, that I see this as his ability to move inside and outside. Because, like you said, Kyle Phillips is going to be the primary slot guy mm-hmm. on this team. I mean, he's the shiftiest. He's probably the best route runner mm-hmm. on the team and can really work the middle.
Exactly.
But he can't be out there for every single play. And so when you're able to take Kyle Phillips off and move a DeAndre Hopkins, like you said, whether it's motioning him in, lining him up there, you know, whatever it is, not only is it confusing the defense, but it's also getting other guys opportunities to come out and work. You know, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, he's also a guy that can play multiple positions. But for me, I primarily see him as an outside receiver. Mm-hmm. And that gives him more opportunity. Chris Moore, who's more than likely going to make this team as well, that gives him more opportunities and more reps. So I just feel like with the versatility of a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, him being your number one option, just the fact that you can move him around and sub other players in and out is going to give a lot of range for this Titans receiving core, and giving the ability for more people to play and get more opportunities and get other guys rest, so that this team isn't necessarily relying heavily on just a select few guys like we saw last year. And so that's the big difference for me, is just seeing, you know, guys that are lower on the depth chart getting more opportunities because of it.
Well, they're all going to get an opportunity to play in the slot, again, because you can get to it in so many different ways. You know, you can be, you know, in trips or in bunch, and you can be the inside receiver, and you can be the point receiver, but you're still the slot receiver because there's somebody outside of you. So there's various ways they can get to it. And all these guys, you know, they need to have the ability to play multiple positions. Just because Kyle Phillips, you know, is my primary inside guy, he needs to be able to, you know, if we want to motion him out, if he stars the inside, want to motion him outside of a Traylon or a D-Hop, he has to have the ability to motion outside, run an outside route, and get open. So all of these guys got to be able to have the ability to not just play inside, but play outside. It's with the receivers, it's sort of like basketball. Basketball to me has become a positionless sport. You got to be able to do everything. 6'11 guys got to be able, more than likely, to bring the ball up on a fast break, because you might get the rebound and you may have to go. Mm-hmm. You know, we may want to break. So
we saw guys like Jokic
exactly,
doing that. Same
you got to be able to do that. Why? Because the NBA is becoming positionless. Well, the receivers are positionless. You got to be able to line up inside. You got to be able to line up outside. You got to be able to do multiple things as a receiver. I learned that a long time ago in my career, and it helped further my career, you know, after that. And that's what not only D-Hop, and he understands it, but these other guys, these younger guys got to understand. Just because Kyle Phillips and D-Hop may be playing our slot, or Kyle Phillips is the primary slot, all y'all better know that position.
Yeah.
Because, especially in a two-minute drill, we may have to do some things on the fly. So you better know what you need to do at the slot position if indeed you're caught in that situation.
And I like what you said there. You said that, you know, that's kind of what extended your career. Uh-huh. And I think because your career started to kind of melt into this new generation of 7-on-7 being really prevalent in the game today. You know, when I was growing up, like 7-on-7 was first kind of coming out. Mm-hmm. Quarterbacks were kind of, you know, playing football more year-round than they ever had instead of playing other sports. And with the rules that the NFL has implemented, it's put a focal point on wide receivers. I mean, we've seen it with the running back market. They used to be the highest paid position because running the ball and playing defense is what the NFL used to be, you know, focused in on. Mm-hmm. But nowadays we see it where, you know, having number one wide receivers and not just one really good wide receiver, but numerous down the depth chart is really important and key to a team's success. And so you're seeing wide receivers nowadays, like you mentioned, you know, going off motion to the slot, running different routes. And the more versatile your route tree is, the more likely you're going to be able to play and make a contribution to the team.
Well, the more you can do, the longer you can hang around. And if you can do the more you can do at a high level, then the sky's the limit for you. Again, I learned that early on, the more I can do and not just do it, but do it at a high level, the longer I was going to stick around. D-Hop understands that, so I'm sure he has no problem with playing in the slot if they need him to play in it. But all those guys got to realize that. You're not just a one-trick pony, so to speak. You got to be able to be – you have to become positionless at the receiver position, meaning I'm not just strictly an outside guy or an X. I'm a Z if you need me to be a Z. I'm an H if you need me to be an H. I'm a Y if you need me to be a Y. Whatever you need me to be, that particular play, I will be in regards to the receivers.
The game summer ticket tour is heading to Homegrown Tap Room and Kitchen located at 2720 Old Lebanon Road this Friday afternoon from 2 to 6. Come eat, drink, hang, and leave with a pair of free Sounds, Preds, Big Machine Music City Grand Prix tickets, or concert tickets. Also get signed up for the grand prize, Titans tickets, Preds tickets, and the 501 Club, and a two-night stay at Opryland Hotel with access to Sound Waves. Black Tie Moving delivers the game summer ticket tour. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/tour. Coming up next, Joe Rexroth came out with his prediction for the 53-man roster before training camp started. We are going to look into that and talk about who Joe Rexroth has and if we agree with all of his selections. You're listening to Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back into Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. We teased it before the break. Joe Rexroth came out with his Titans 53-man roster projection. And I wanted to get into it a little bit, D-Mace.
Uh-huh.
Let's start with the quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. They implement the new rule that you can have the emergency quarterback, you know, dressed up if need be mm-hmm. in the middle of the game. And he has all three quarterbacks making the final 53-man roster. Your thoughts on that?
Three quarterbacks, it's not far-fetched, I don't think. You know, I believe that, you know, outside of Ryan Tannehill, meaning Willis and Levis, they will determine whether they make this team or not. Obviously, listen, Will Levis is not getting cut. I mean, the dude can – I'm not going to say he can stink – but basically, he can stink.
He can stink. He's the 33rd overall pick. If he sucks, they're going to bring him in.
He's going to make the roster unless he's just so bad where, which I don't think he would ever be, so bad where they just like, man, we can't. But he makes the roster. I think Willis, his spot will be determined on how he performs in preseason. You know, I think he makes the roster, but – just because I think he makes the roster doesn't mean it's going to happen. He has to show that he's making progress as a quarterback. That's what it boils down to. I don't care who you are. If you're a young player or older player, you got to make sure what the coaches are seeing and other players are seeing, they're seeing something that's going to help this club. They're seeing you get better each year or each practice. And if he can do that, mean Willis, then I believe he will make the team. I if he does come in, which it looks like he has, and he shows that he's gotten a lot better, then you're almost in a situation where you can't cut him, I don't think, because he's doing the things you're asking him to do, and he's getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you want to see. If you prove to this coaching staff and the GM that you should be on this team, you're going to be on this team.
So I agree with you. I think that they're going to end up keeping all three because I think it's going to be really close at the end of the day between Levis and Willis. And here's another reason why. You know, this is likely Tannehill's last year.
Yes.
You know, it's a contract year for him. You know, he hasn't really given the team and taken the team to where they want them to go. So I really see this as their last year, and if it's so close between the two, and you've drafted both of them, you've watched Malik develop, you know what caliber of player that Will Levis can be, especially drafting him 33rd overall. I feel like they have to keep all three, and I think it's smart to keep it all three, especially with the injury luck that this team has. So let's move over to the running back position. Joe Rexroad has four running backs on this roster. Now, I'm typically a guy where, you know, I like to see three. You know, I don't like to see four running backs. I don't think you need four running backs, and especially when you got a guy like Derrick Henry and the load that he's going to get, I feel like that fourth running back is a little bit unnecessary. So he's got Derrick Henry, Tajay Spears, Jonathan Ward, and Julius Chestnut.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've heard a lot of good things about Jonathan Ward, but I'm not going to sit here and say I know a lot about him. I do know about Julius Chestnut, and he was on this roster last year. He was kind of that fourth man teetering on the practice squad. They brought him up because they needed somebody to return kicks, and he's able to do that. So for me, I feel like they should go with three, and I think they will go with three. And then Chestnut's the guy just because of his special teams ability.
Yeah, I mean, the first two guys, they're on the team, Henry and Spears. I think after that, it's a toss-up. Now, Hassan Haskins didn't help himself with this off-the-field, off-season incident, you know, this legal situation that he's in. But I'm going to hold all judgments until I hear everything because I'm just not going to sit here and say, oh, he's guilty. No, there are things that we probably don't know that the Titans know.
Yeah.
So
you're innocent until proven guilty
exactly.
In this country, and the Titans believe that they're going to let due process do its
exactly.
thing. Vrabel and Rand Carthon both are in agreement with that they're going to let that play out.
Absolutely. So for what I've seen of Haskins last year, he's a strong, powerful runner. He has a burst. He can play special teams. He can catch the ball out the backfield, you know. So he has an opportunity to make this team. Now, you know, beside his ability on the field, I think what's going to determine it is what happens off the field. So I'm not solely sold on the last two guys. I think Haskins is still in the mix, but I think a lot of that has to do, unfortunately, with his off-the-field incident. So that position for me is yet to be determined, but outside of Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears.
That and along with this, you know, if Hassan Haskins had a lot more production last year, I feel like it would have been a lot, you know, harder of an argument to move off mm-hmm. of him. But, you know, when he got the opportunities, you know, it was 3.4 yards a carry. It was 3.8
Well, the offensive line was horrible.
I
so you can't blame that.
I do understand that. But, you know, again, I think if he would have done a little bit more, maybe shown the ability to be more effective in the receiving game as well, you know, maybe that could have been a bigger, more option. Let's move over to your position uh-huh. of expertise here.
Let's go.
And the wide receivers. Joe Rexroad has six wide receivers making the team. I think five of these are no question. The sixth guy will be up in question. But DeAndre Hopkins, Treylon Burks, Kyle Phillips, Chris Moore, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, and last but not least, Racy McMath. Your thoughts on that?
I think this is pretty much, you know, unless, you know, somebody comes out of the woodwork and surprise the Tennessee Titans. But, I mean, guys like Colton Dow, you know, Mason Kinsey, one of these guys, and there are a few other guys, unless they show the ability to be effective on special teams, which they will get an opportunity in preseason. Then I think what Joe put here is pretty much spot on. You know, with Racy McMath, sort of, you know, he's the one guy that's going to be fighting till the end to make that roster spot, unless, again, he shows something especially, I mean, in preseason that sort of elevates him in that room. But I think keeping six, because you have your top three or four, Hopkins, Burks, Phillips, and Moore. But even those guys, Phillips is going to have to play special teams. He's going to have to be a returner. He's going to have to show he can catch the ball. Chris Moore may have to do some special teams duties. Obviously, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is the one guy that he's been here long enough, but he hasn't been entrenched into the special teams unit. So, Mark, watch that. Watch Nick Westbrook-Ikhine.
So,
because here's the deal. If you are the fourth or fifth wide receiver on this team, on any team, you got to be able to play special teams.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't shown the ability to play special teams, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. So watch, really watch, because there may be a surprise guy that makes this roster.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be at the expense of Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. As much as I like him.
Interesting.
As much as I like him.
See, I think Westbrook-Ikhine is going to make it just with his experience. But I like Colton Dowell mm-hmm. over Racy McMath for one reason. Mm-hmm. Him and Will Levis have built a connection. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we might see more of Colton Dowell because of that connection in preseason, in the game when it matters. And Racy just simply hasn't proven enough. We're going to stay on this topic.
Uh-huh.
Going into the final hour, we're going to kind of look at some of the defensive positions that Joe Rexroad has on his final 53-man roster. You're listening to Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.